you fly by an apple fan. Dotty makes your eyes light up. Your tummy say, howdy, shoot fly by an apple fan. Dotty, I never get enough of that wonderful stuff.
This is the Northwest Passage on KLCC. It's difficult to estimate how long it will take a creation to emerge in its final form. Fort Mary prankster and gentleman farmer Ken Babbs, it's literally been decades. This month, Overlook Press is releasing Who Shot the Water Buffalo. Ken, welcome back to the Northwest Passage.
It's my great, great pleasure to be here. Shoe fly pie and apple pan dowdy is just like my book. Your eyes light up and your lips say howdy when you first turn that page.
That's at the beginning of your two sections on Vietnam.
It is, because the name of the unit, the operations, when we went in there in 1962, was given the code name Shoe Fly. Why? Nobody knows.
Are you a fan of shoe fly pie?
My lips say howdy. You never get enough of that wonderful stuff.
I do want to wish you a happy April Fool's Day while we're here.
Thank you very much. I wish we had some kind of April Fool's joke we could pull.
You wrote most of this book in the early 60s after your tour of duty.
I started writing it when I was in Vietnam in 1962, long passages. I had, you know, gone to Stanford before I went in the Marine Corps, where I met Kesey in the Stanford writing class. And so I was geared into writing. I've always had a bent for it. And so I was thinking writing all along.
And was this was it easy to carve out the time? Did you have a typewriter handy? How did you compose when you were in country?
There was a typewriter in the company office. The company office was a tent when we first got over there. The whole unit was there living in tents, and everything water systems, everything was portable, mm-hmm. the way the Marine Corps can operate, going to a flat piece of land and set up. But the company clerk had a typewriter, and I'd go in there at night and when nothing else was happening and type away.
Like you, the two main characters in the book, Huckleby and Cochran, serve in Vietnam as helicopter pilots, Marines.
That's correct.
And the narrator is Huckleby.
Uh-huh.
Did you always want to be from Texas, Ken?
No, the thing about writing, and writing fiction in particular, is you take a real lesson from Shakespeare. Look at all the characters he wrote about, but none of them were Shakespeare. They were all characters that he invented. Of course, he picked up traits from real people and stuck them in there. So just like me, when I wanted a narrator, I don't know how I came up with the Texican Tomas Huckleby, but he turned out to be the perfect narrator, and his buddy, the loudmouth, big galoot Cochran, the
right.
perfect compliment to him.
Your book is referred to at times as a Vietnam novel. Is that an oversimplification?
Well, it's called that because it takes place in Vietnam, mm-hmm. and during the war and during a Marine Corps operation. So I think that it's a good overall, description, kind of like a big blanket over the whole thing. But within that context, anything can happen.
With Babs at the typewriter, anything can happen.
Well, the thing about it is, this book, I've said before, it takes place in Vietnam, but it's a story of men at war apart from their women. And it could take place any time in history, in the Peloponnesian War or in Homer's time or in the World War I or in any of the things that are going on now.
Each chapter begins with another storyline where the Marine is talking to his doctor. Tell us about that.
Well, you pick it up right from the beginning where his shoulder is all shot up. He's in the helicopter being evacuated, and he is talking to the doc. And at the same time, he's getting shot up with morphine, and so he's getting a little loose and goose. And then he goes under, and when he's under, he's seeing everything that happened as if it's a dream or a movie, and he's, for the purpose of the book, relating it.
You brought an example of the book.
I did.
Uh-huh. Would you like to share that with us now?
I would.
Set the scene a little bit.
This is Huckleby talking. Arvins have mobbed the helicopter, 30 or 40, each carrying a pack full of bedding and mess gear and clothing. Lowland soldiers, they hate the mountains, and they can't wait to go home. They smother Sergeant Sunto in the belly before he has a chance to unload the cargo. Cochran waves out the window, "Get away, you bastards, damn you! You aboard, Sunto?" He rams the mixture forward to full rich, intending to take off before the Vietnamese can overload us. I pull the handle back and hang on tight. Cochran sits astonished, the red knob immobile in his fist. "God damn," he yells. He turns loose of the handle, pulls off his shoulder straps, and jumps out of the cockpit. He leaps into the mass of soldiers, rice, chickens, and backpacks, beats on the soldiers with his fence post arms, throws them aside like wheat shocks ripped by a tornado. The Arvins run from the helicopter like a rack of pool balls blasted by the cue. Two are trapped in the belly. Cochran reaches in and tosses one out by the seat of his pants. The soldier lands on his head, rolls to his feet, and comes up running. Sergeant Sunto throws the other soldier out. Cochran belts him on the side of the head as he flies by. The Arvin stumbles like a man coming to grips with land after a wild ride on a centrifuge, and Sunto starts throwing out the supplies.
Woo! A lot of the writing has that action to it. It really engages the reader. It really moves forward. It's a fun read that way.
It is, and it's because as you're reading what is going on in Huckleby's mind, it is like a dream in which you see the action and are part of the action at the same time.
You and Ken Kesey, longtime buddies and writing partners. I'm sure he's smiling down on you, very happy for you and proud of you about your novel being published.
Yes, he is, and I appreciate all the years I spent with him and how he shared everything with me. And now he sits on my shoulder and whispers in my ear, and behind me, Brian Lanker kicks me in the rear. And all the ones who have gone, we hold dear, don't ever be ashamed to shed them a tear.
Very nice picture taken by Brian Lanker in the book.
Yes.
You're looking good there again.
Well, the magic of Brian Lanker does the job.
Yeah, what a touch. Huh?
Uh-huh.
Folks, I think, would be interested to hear who you worked with, both as editor for you and your agent.
Yes, my agent was our old friend, Kesey's agent, Sterling Lord. In 1963, when I had a completed manuscript, I sent it to him. And in 1964, when we took the bus to New York City, I met with Sterling, and he went over the manuscript and told me what he thought I should do with it. And I brought it back to California on the bus, and by then, Kesey and I and the Pranksters, we were making the movie, Intrepid Trips and the Intrepid Traveler and the Merry Band of Pranksters Look for a Cool Place. And we weren't writers, we were now movie makers. And so it got shunted aside, and then it got lost. It disappeared.
Really?
Yes, but an old buddy of mine in the Marine Corps, Gordon Gunner, wanted a copy, so I Xeroxed off a copy at one point and sent it to him. And years later, when it was missing, mine was missing, he sent it back to me. And if it weren't for that, this book would have never have happened.
Now, after all those years, did it all come right back to you when you started reading back through your manuscript?
Thank God I had that manuscript, because with the deteriorating memory, I would never have been able to recreate those scenes and have that authenticity of the time.
Whose memory is deteriorating?
I think you told me yours were before the game.
I couldn't remember it.
It must have been two other guys.
We do want to know a little bit about the water buffalo in the title.
The water buffalo.
Tell us about the water buffalo.
Well, the water buffalo, you know, is the animal for the Vietnamese farmer. He does all their work for
him. The beast of burden.
Yeah, and does all their work for him. And they're always standing around in the rice paddies. And so in the book, when they come back from one of their harrowing missions in the ready room tent, one of the officers jumps up and screams, "All right, who shot the water buffalo?" And Also, as a play on words, a water buffalo is a water trailer in the Marine Corps that they use to keep water in a 500-gallon water trailer. And at the end of the tent row where Cochran and Huckabee are living, there is a water buffalo that where they draw their water. And so when the guy yells, "Who shot the water buffalo?" Cochran says, "Oh, no, not the water buffalo. And come quick, Huck, get the buckets." And they run and they look, and the water buffalo has no holes in it at all. And they go back, and turns out somebody up in the air had shot the poor water buffalo up in the field.
Speaking of Huckabee and Cochran and water, there's a great scene at the Admiral's house. They're getting ready to rent a house from him on Pensacola Bay.
Uh-huh.
And the Admiral and his wife, individually and supposedly unbeknownst to one another, invite one of them into their room for a little tipple.
Yes, because neither one of them can drink.
That's right.
They're both too far gone. Livers are shot. Minds are bent. So every once in a while, one will say, "Huckabee, come in and help me find the silverware and bring out to set the table." And the Admiral will say, "Cochran, have I shown you my samurai sword collection?" And they go in the rooms and come out. And the night goes on and the hurricane hits. They're tippled to the gills.
How is it working with Overlook Press?
Wonderful, wonderful. Overlook Press is owned by a guy named Peter Mayer, whose his father founded the press first in Woodstock, New York, and then in New York City. And at one point, Peter Mayer was the head of Viking Press, and it was when Kesey did his book called The Further Inquiry, mm-hmm. which is about Neil Cassady and the bus. And so we went to Las Vegas for a big book conference, and Peter Mayer rented this room at the bottom of Caesar's Palace. There was tables set up with food on them and chairs, Kesey up the top, talking about the book and describing what happened. And on the back of the room in front of this door was a sheet, and it was showing the bus movie. And at one point in the story, the bus drives out the bus barn in the movie, and at that point, Kit Kesey, Ken's nephew, is sitting in the real bus behind that door. The door goes up. He drives the bus right into the room, smashes into all these tables and drinks and food go flying, and people are running, screaming, and Peter Mayer, the head of Viking at the time, turns to David Stanford, Kesey's agent, and says, "Now that's what I call publishing."
An excellent entrance.
Yeah, yes, and so that's the man whose company published my book.
Excellent. Ken, when can we expect your next novel?
As soon as this flogging this novel gets done, I see first Oregon all this month, up and down Oregon, and then San Francisco and L.A. next month, and Seattle and Bellingham, and then take a break and then hit the Midwest. And then finally, New York City for a final grand triumphal thing.
And that'll be great.
And then the next book, did I say this already? It's going to be about the adventures Kesey and the pranksters and all our friends had together. It's called Cronies.
Thanks so much for being here.
My pleasure, Trip, as always. And wonderful to talk to all my friends out there.
Congratulations on the book.
Thank you.
Ken Babb's novel is called Who Shot the Water Buffalo? It's published by Overlook Press. Ken has book readings coming up, as he said. A couple of them will be coming up in the next week. Tomorrow night, 7:30 at Tsunami Books. Next Thursday, Ken is at the Knight Library on the U of O campus. That one is at 7 o'clock. And go to the website, skypilotclub.com.